Exposing Myths About Myths, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute of Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Good to be with you again, Barry. It's our first day back after a long weekend, and I think our voices are down about, both of us, about an octave, showing you that we're both a little tired this week.
Yeah, well,
we'll get it going.
We can work that out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Chuck, that's just the vicissitudes of doing almost live radio. Sometimes your hours are a little strange. But as we're looking over the weekend, you know, we look at various news sources and we get things sent to us from supporters and folks around the area. And this time around, we got a link that was sent to us by a friend of ours. And it was a link to a white paper, Chuck, is the best way to put this.
Yeah, that's what I call it.
From Ohio's Buckeye Institute for Public Policy Solutions. And now, Chuck, just a little disclaimer. Buckeye Institute is a libertarian-leaning conservative economic research group, basically a think tank similar to what the Institute for Principal Policy is, except theirs comes from just a more secular-centric economic viewpoint instead of a biblio or Christocentric viewpoint such as the Institute has. And that's okay. But Buckeye Institute and their president, Kevin Holtzberry, who I know and is a good friend of mine, by the way, Chuck, recently worked on a paper with the Reason Foundation. Now, the Reason Foundation is a national libertarian think tank and policy organization. They publish Reason Magazine. But I would say if I were to call Buckeye Institute more of a fiscal conservative and socially maybe somewhat conservative organization, Reason is pretty much your standard libertarian fare. They're economically conservative and socially liberal. But the social part really doesn't play that big of a role in this white paper that was put out jointly by these two organizations. And this white paper is called 10 Myths and Facts on Transportation Public-Private Partnerships. Well, as soon as our friend who sent this to us saw the public-private partnership issue, it was immediately kicked over to us to say, hey, what do you guys think about this? Well, in a new fashion, as we looked at it and read through the paper, we've had a lot of thoughts about it, haven't we, Chuck?
Yeah, I'd say so. I went through it very quickly, and I said, well, there's a lot of cherry-picked questions here. Let's just say the myths were constructed in such a way by the people who were debunking the myths that they would be easily debunked by them, which is a way that this is often done to make it look like you've got a slam dunk case when in fact you don't really have a slam dunk case. And that's what was done here. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I've read Reason Magazine, and I think of it more as a left libertarian group rather than a conservative libertarian group.
Well, no, you're right about Reason, but Buckeye is more conservative.
Right.
Than the libertarianism. Reason is pretty far to the left in their libertarianism.
Right. I'm not sure how you get there. Rachel Maddow claims to be a left libertarian, and I think all that means is that you want the government to pay for your drugs,
well, essentially. Exactly. government should.
And when I say your drugs, I mean your recreational drugs, not your.
Or as I've seen others say, keep your hands off my body, but give me my drugs.
Yes, and pay for my contraception for it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a right that in the way that not only should you be allowed to do whatever you want with your body, but the government should provide all the health care to repair the damage you've done to yourself.
Yeah, well, that's where government gets into trouble, Chuck, because as folks who know me know, one of my favorite mantras is that your morality drives your economy, not the other way around.
Right.
For most people, it's like it's the economy, stupid, as we heard in the Clinton administration, and that even conservatives sometimes default knee-jerk to that, well, we got to fix all these economic problems first. It's like, whoa, if we got our morality right, if we got our social policy right, you would see benefits coming in economic policy. Of course, you've got people from the left who are pushing the other direction with homosexual rights and forcing businesses to have diversity, et cetera. But that's not necessarily what Reed and the Buckeye Institute are talking about today. What they're talking about today is the idea that government And they're talking about state governments mainly, but also local governments. And we could extend it to the national, but I think maybe it's too far gone at the national level. That local governments and state governments have spent too much money, Chuck, and they're handling things that they don't need to be handling. Well, I agree with their policy report in that respect.
Yes.
Yes, the growth of government has gone much farther than the revenues coming in. And, of course, that's a big problem because if you spend more than you take in, folks, you're heading to bankruptcy. You did it personally, you'd be threatening and endangering your family, your property, your home, and everything around you. If you do it at a governmental level, well, the effects are just magnified and it's spread out among many families in that governmental unit. But the introduction of the report was written by Greg Lawson, who's Buckeye Institute's lobbyist at the State House. And I know Greg. We've gone back a number of years. He's a friend of mine, too. So I agree in the sense that, yes, Ohio's government has grown at an unsustainable rate. We all know that. We're teetered on the brink of an $8 billion hole in our budget, which honestly, Chuck, was not solved the right way. It was solved by patchworks and borrowing federal stimulus money when it should have been solved by deep cuts and getting the state out of certain areas of their operation. People who know me know that I argue very strongly at times. Imagine that. Me, you're arguing strongly. That I argue very strongly at times against governments owning parkland. And why can't we have private foundations and organizations raise money to uphold and gain, upkeep and maintain parks and wildlife areas and recreation areas? Why should the federal and state government be in the real estate business? That's my problem, Jack.
Things that would actually generate revenue are taken off the revenue rolls and actually become a liability.
Well, and that's a big key, and that's one of the things that they stay away from to report. That's the reason why I wanted to bring it out, Chuck, and that is the idea that when a government takes property or takes over a function like toll roads or parks or anything of that nature, that property is automatically taken out of the tax base. And so, therefore, it's doubly exacerbating the problem. Not only is it not generating revenue because it's not generating the base taxes that it would generate if it were in private hands, but the state then also has to pay for the maintenance, upkeep, repair, and improvement. And let's not kid ourselves, ladies and gentlemen, when I say the state has to pay, I mean you and I have to pay, because the state doesn't generate money independently. They get it from our tax dollars.
And there's the rub, Barry. People don't seem to understand this. You can see this in local governments all the time. They keep talking about all this green space they want to create and all these this parkland. Well, what you'll usually find is that what the cities do is they buy up a piece of empty property or a piece of property that was formerly a farm or continues to be a farm until the time they buy it, which produced revenue for the tax rolls of the city.
Right.
And they'll bring it in, spend millions of dollars to create parkland out of this farm, and then suddenly it falls off the tax rolls, and then people wonder why their income tax has to go up to pay for the maintenance of all this property. Well, the fact is, as these guys correctly point out, if that property remained on the tax rolls and you simply allowed people to keep their income tax and pay a fee to use the park, you could generate all kinds of revenue.
Certainly, Chuck. I mean, I know many people who use parks all the time, and if it were a private park that they had to pay a membership to or something of that nature, they would do that because those are things that are important to them and that they find necessary to their enjoyment of life. But to say that everybody has to pay for a park that only so many people ever get the opportunity or ever take the opportunity to use is not a very wise use of your resources or good stewardship.
And what's the counter argument to that you always hear?
Well, you always have the counter argument. It's for the general welfare of the public.
Yes, you're being selfish. This is for the good of the community.
Good of the community. That's right.
And that's exactly, essentially, what we're seeing in this article. Their base argument is that this is generally good for the community.
Well, and you know, Chuck, you had talked earlier about cherry picking, and folks, the reason why this one's really cherry picking is because they only focus on one aspect of these public-private partnerships, and that's in the area of transportation. Now, Chuck, I'm going to say it's hard to make a case for total privatization of things like roads and bridges, considering the fact that even our U.S. Constitution, Congress has the power to develop and maintain what they call post roads.
Post roads, yeah.
And nowadays, with our interstate systems and other things that gets your mail to you from within a day or two, unless the post office did, of course, or spends too much money on other things like Looney Tunes ties or whatever, or pensions.
Pensions, yeah. That's pensions. What's killing the post office.
It's killing the post office. But the point is that it's hard to make a case to say you totally privatize roads and bridges. So they are cherry-picking in the sense that in the general public's mind, we can't sell off roads and bridges to private entities. So when they start looking at this and they start picking these out and, well, 10 myths that they do, honestly, Chuck, this is powder puff stuff.
Right.
Well, the first myth, that public-private partnerships involve the sale of roads to private interests. I'd see again right there. That's the first thing on the average citizen who may not have a background on this. When you said something about do something with your local state route here and somebody maintained by this Wazoo company out of Walla Walla, Washington, yeah, or the Yazoo company out of Shanghai, China, people get a little nervous about the issue. I can understand that. But the key is that really, when they start dealing with transportation infrastructure on these issues, they're using an easy target. And they're trying to build a case because this paper, as said in the introduction, is first in a series of reports outlining areas where public-private partnerships are a potential tool. You notice how they couch the phrase, a potential tool for effective and efficient government. Well, Chuck, I think more effective and efficient government would include government getting out of businesses where they don't have any constitutional authority to be there, such as running parks or buying up vast tracts of land so that they can put it into a reserve. We've seen in the federal government, and if anybody's ever taken a look, and Chuck, maybe we should put this map up online, Dr. Michael Kaufman's map. Of what the country would have looked like had all of the various United Nations-sponsored and then federal and state-driven policies in relation to wildlands and biodiversity and other areas where government would basically say, well, you can't go there, you can't work there, you can't raise crops there, you can't have a home in this location, because now government controls all of this. I think we should put that map up for folks. But again,
we really shouldn't speak of it in the past tense, because it still goes on. In fact, it exists in the form of the Agenda 21, which is basically moving in, instead of being done at the federal level, it's being done at the local level, and the way it's being done is through zoning and planning commissions.
That's right.
If you found your property less and less and less usable due to city regulation and the fact that you have to buy a permit basically to blow your nose on your property. Yes, I'm exaggerating, but it's almost getting to that. You can't park a boat in your side yard. You can't do this. You can't do another thing. You have to paint with certain colors, that kind of thing. That's all part of Agenda 21, ladies and gentlemen. What it is essentially the county and the cities claiming true ownership of your property, which you see in the form of property taxes. And let's face facts here. You don't really own your property. You rent it from the county. And if you want to demonstrate to yourself that you don't really own it, stop paying your taxes for a couple of years and see what happens.
Exactly. Well, Chuck, and ladies and gentlemen, public-private partnerships, just to thumbnail it real quick, a public-private partnership is where government owns something, whether it be a toll road or a golf course or a public park or some other infrastructure. And in order to raise revenues, because remember, once government owns it, it's out of the tax base, so it's not generating tax revenues the government uses to run. Well, then what they do is they create, and about 30 states have enacted legislation over the last couple of decades, Chuck, to allow for a partnership with a private entity where the private entity pays a fee, whether it's in the form of a lease or use or something of that nature, to manage and control and set the fees for and take the profits from a government-owned piece of infrastructure. Now, when we're talking about transportation, we're mainly talking about like toll roads and bridges. So let's say, and this happened in Indiana about 6 or 7 years ago, Chuck, where the state of Indiana was having a budget situation.
Yep.
And so Governor Mitch Daniels leased the Indiana portion of their turnpike.
You know what, Barry? I hate to do this to you. We are out of time.
Oh, it figures. Well,
ladies and gentlemen. No, let's continue on till tomorrow and start right at that spot.
Okay, we'll do that, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be talking about some examples of public-private partnerships. and why these 10 myths have some myths about them as well.
Yes. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies, and we'll wrap up this discussion.